Last week we looked at 1 Kings, and before we continue into 2 Kings and the rest of the history of Israel up until the captivity, we're going to take a few weeks to look at the writings of Solomon, because we looked at him in 1 Kings. He has three books in the Bible that are written by him, and the first one, the one we're going to be looking at tonight, is Proverbs. We'll start with what the definition of a proverb is, just of a proverb in general, not so the book of Proverbs. A proverb in general is, here's a definition from the Bible Knowledge Commentary, or at least adapted from it: a statement that makes a comparison or summarizes a common experience, usually in a short, memorable, or witty way. Or another definition, and I like this one better, is a short sentence based on long experience. And that's from Miguel de Cervantes, who wrote Don Quixote. A short sentence based on long experience. And there's, you know, examples of proverbs, not just in the Bible, but in everyday speech. Some in everyday speech are early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Even a stopped clock is right twice a day. Yep. Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And so forth. And the book of Proverbs is very similar kind of statements. And some of them are, again, very memorable, use very memorable imagery to make the point stick in your mind. Chapter 27, verse 14, and this is one that now we know Solomon is not a morning person from this proverb, where it says, if anyone loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. I'm with Solomon on that one. We need to wait at least until after the coffee. 26:11, as a dog returned to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. A gross one, but a memorable one for all that. 25:24, better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. I suppose Solomon would know. He had 1,000 of them. Yeah. A really well-known one, Proverbs 16:18, where pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall, which usually gets abbreviated to pride goes before a fall. So it's just short observations on how life is that are put in a short, memorable way. And one of the ways that Solomon expressed his wisdom was in collecting and writing proverbs. Some of them he himself made up, and some of them he collected from various other places and just compiled into books himself. In fact, I remember in one class that I took in seminary, our professor had collections of proverbs from ancient Egypt. And some of them sounded an awful lot like the Proverbs of Solomon, so probably the source of some of his. Solomon's wisdom is described over in 1 Kings 4, and in verse 32 it mentions his proverbs, where it says he spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs numbered 1,005. Now, we don't have that many of them. There's 915 verses in our book of Proverbs. These are the ones that God saw fit to preserve as divinely inspired. We only have a couple of his songs, if you want to count Song of Solomon and Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes also mentions Solomon collecting proverbs. Solomon in that book refers to himself as the teacher or the preacher. It says, not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. So again, we have, this is just one of the ways that Solomon expressed his wisdom that he had from God. And the book of Proverbs is mostly written by him. We have a few headings throughout the book that tell us directly the authors. Several times in chapter 1:1 through 22:16, we're told that these are the Proverbs of Solomon. So my guess would be that's the ones that he wrote himself. 22:17 through 24:34 is said to be the sayings of the wise. So that's perhaps the ones that Solomon collected from elsewhere. Chapters 25 through 29 are again said to be the Proverbs of Solomon, and this time it's said that they're compiled by Hezekiah's scribes. Now, Hezekiah was the king of Israel who lived approximately 200 years after Solomon, so that means that this book of Proverbs that we have was still being worked on and compiled at least 200 years after the reign of Solomon. Chapter 30 is an interesting one. It mentions that they are the words of Agur the seer or the prophet. We don't know anything about Agur other than his name appears on one chapter's worth of Proverbs. Chapter 31 is similar in that it's attributed to King Lemuel. And it's verses 1 through 9 are said to be advice from his mother. We don't know who King Lemuel is either. It's possible that it is another name for Solomon. The name means dedicated to God or something of the sort, which would mean that his mother would be Bathsheba. So it's possible that this is Bathsheba's advice to Solomon. Whatever the case, King Lemuel, whoever that is, verses 1 through 9 are attributed to him. And the last few verses, 10 through 31, don't come, there's no change of authors, so that's probably King Lemuel also. And it's the description of a virtuous woman. As far as how the Proverbs are arranged, there are a few longer sections on things like the value of wisdom and the folly of adultery, the dangers of alcohol, the value of a virtuous woman. But most of the book, especially from chapters 10 through 30, is arranged very, very randomly. I always tell you when you're studying the Bible, context is king. That doesn't really apply in most of Proverbs. Because Proverbs, he just kind of whips them out there. Most of them are only a verse or two long, and they're kind of standalone. They don't really have much connection to the verses around them. Like I said, chapters 1 through 9, there's actually longer sections as they're kind of speeches about the value of wisdom. But after that, it's kind of just a verse or two at a time, with a few exceptions. Now, we do still take the Proverbs in the context of the Bible as a whole, because God isn't going to contradict himself, and when we have a difficult passage, we can go to an easier-to-understand passage that talks about the same thing to help us understand. So we have the context of the Bible as a whole, but you don't generally take chapters 10 through 30 in context like you do the rest of the Bible. You don't need to read the few verses before and the few verses after, because there's not much connection. And as to why Solomon arranged it that way, he doesn't tell us. The best guess I've heard is he arranged it that way so that you're forced to read through and you read a little bit of everything as you go. Someone also said it's just like a dad just whipping advice out there at his son, and he doesn't have any organization as he's whipping it out there. I think the first option is probably a little closer to what's going on, but who knows? So that's the arrangement of the book. The purpose of the book is stated in chapter 1, verses 2 through 7. So chapter 1, verses 2 through 7 says, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. For gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance, for understanding proverbs and parables and sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the purpose of these sayings is to increase a person's understanding and wisdom. And this is about more than memorizing facts, more than cramming knowledge in your head. You know, anyone can do that. It's about grasping the significance of what you know. It's about using what you know in your life. A description that I remember hearing a lot growing up of the difference between just pure knowledge and wisdom is knowledge, you know, knows that when you drop something, it falls because the gravity exists, and wisdom then says, I don't try and step off the balcony of my fifth story apartment building because I will fall and die. Another shorter way of putting it is wisdom is skill for living. So this book is full of advice about how life generally works. You know, if you do X, then Y is going to happen, and that's how life in general operates, and then how you should live in light of that knowledge. And it's meant to benefit a variety of people. It's meant to benefit both the young and inexperienced, as well as those who are already wise. Those who are young and inexperienced should not decide that acquiring understanding and living wisely is too much work. That's the person like that is the Proverbs definition of a fool. And like I said, the first few chapters actually have longer chunks of verses that are related. Most of them are about how valuable wisdom is, and Solomon urging his son to seek wisdom, which his son obviously doesn't do, since his son Rehoboam splits the kingdom, as we saw last week in 1 Kings. But not only is it for the young and the inexperienced, but it's also for people who already possess a level of wisdom. Because those who have wisdom and understanding should be eager to acquire more because they know its value already. And unlike most collections of proverbs or folk wisdom that you'll find, like the ones I told you about that I read about from ancient Egypt, this book of wisdom, this book of proverbs, is very concerned with having a right relationship with God. It's not just about practical living, like if you do this, you'll get this good result. The starting point of having that skill for living is, as Solomon says in verse 7, the fear of God. And that doesn't mean a cringing panic toward God. It means that proper respect of recognizing how great he is and how small and how dependent on him we are in comparison. Wise living isn't just about, will this get me the result that I want, but also, is this what God wants for my life? Because ultimately, we're only going to be happy, joyful people who experience the life God wants for us if we have in mind what he wants. So that's the purpose of the book. As far as interpreting Proverbs, many people make the mistake when it comes to interpreting Proverbs by treating them as if they are promises. And that's really not what the majority of them are. An example would be Proverbs 10:4, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. People who want to take this as a promise would say, well, see, as long as I work hard, I'm going to get rich. God promised it. And then when they go out and work hard and, something unexpected happens, the economy tanks and they lose everything. Well, God didn't keep his promise. Well, the Proverbs aren't promises. They're proverbs. They're telling you the way that life generally operates. In other words, all things being equal, a person who works hard is going to be financially better off than a person who's lazy and mooches off other people or off the system. Other factors can come into play that affect a person's wealth or poverty, but the general principle is true. The general principle should guide our steps. And sometimes the proverb comes right out and says, do this or do that, but most of the time it leaves us to take the general principle and figure out how to apply it in our own situation. It gives us these broad principles rather than giving us very specific commands for very specific situations. In some cases, you end up with what has been called dueling proverbs. And that's where there's two proverbs that seem to give contrary advice. And this happens quite a lot. It doesn't happen real often in the book of Proverbs, but in Proverbs in general, it happens a lot. For example, there's look before you leap, but he who hesitates is lost. There's better safe than sorry, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. There's if at first you don't succeed, try again, and there's don't beat a dead horse. And occasionally in the book of Proverbs, you'll end up with something similar. And the most obvious example is in Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5. That's because the dueling proverbs here come one right after the other. And so Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5. Verse 4 says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. And then verse 5, answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. So what do you do with advice like that? How do you deal with it? I mean, we always say the Bible doesn't contradict itself, because it's God's word. God knows all things and doesn't lie. Yeah, it does. It is a matter of personal wisdom. It comes with practice. It comes with experience, recognizing in which situation which proverb applies. So for this one, where it says, don't answer a fool according to his folly, is this a situation where if I correct this person, it's just going to get us in a big, stupid argument that annoys both of us and doesn't go anywhere? Most discussions on the internet are that way. this is the Bible version of the admonition to don't feed the trolls on the internet. Those people who are just in it to argue, don't. They're just going to drag you down to their level and make you mad. Don't answer the fool according to their folly. But sometimes there's a person who's spouting foolish things, and for their own good, or maybe for the good of those who are hearing them, you want to point out where they're wrong. You may or may not change their mind. If they're a true fool, you're not going to change their mind. But at the very least, the others who hear will have a chance to recognize this person is not wise. This person is, in fact, being incredibly foolish. It's a matter of recognizing in what situation which proverb applies. Because again, these are straight statements of how things generally work. There's also some proverbs, and these ones seem very strange when you first come across them. Proverbs that talk about questionable or sinful behavior and almost seem to be complimenting it, almost seem to be endorsing it. That they point out that this questionable behavior can be pleasant. An example of that would be Proverbs 18:8, where it says, "The words of a gossip are like choice morsels, they go down into the inmost parts." Well, that doesn't sound good. In fact, that seems so wrong that in some Bible translations, I think the King James does it, as well as some of the even ancient manuscripts get altered so that it says that they're like knives that go down into your belly. Because, you know, that sounds more like what the Bible would say about gossip, that they're knives that destroy you. But I'm sorry, the original Hebrew says they are like choice morsels that go down into your belly and are sweet and tasty. Similarly, just a few verses later, chapter 18, verse 16, says, "A gift opens the way and ushers the giver into the presence of the great." Basically saying, bribes work. Bribes will get you places. You know, offer the right person the right gift and you can appear in the right place at the right time. Yeah, right. And there's the answer to it. These proverbs are pointing out the way things generally work. Yes. Certain sinful actions can be nice and pleasant at the moment. Yes, bribery can get you a step forward at the moment. But this is where we take these proverbs in the context of the Bible as a whole, or the book even as a whole. The Bible is always honest with the fact that, you know, sin for a little while can be nice. Sin for a little while can cause prosperity. But there's plenty of other proverbs that tell where these things end up. Yes, for the moment, gossip might be like sweet and tasty morsels. But Proverbs 16:28, "A perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends." And if you go through the book of Proverbs, how we use our words is one of the topics that comes up over and over and over again. And when you read the book as a whole, it becomes obvious that, yes, gossip might taste nice at the moment, but it is destructive and sinful in the end. Similarly, this verse that seems to be saying, yeah, bribery will get you places. And this isn't the only verse in Proverbs that says it. There's a couple others that say similar things. But when you put it against verses like 15:27, where it says, "The greedy bring ruin to their households, but the one who hates bribes will live." In the end, being dishonest catches up with the person. As the New Testament says, you reap what you sow. So these proverbs that are very honest about sin occasionally working out for a little while and sin occasionally being pleasant are balanced by saying, yeah, in the end, they catch up with you. They are not a good thing. If you have a hard time understanding what a proverb is saying about a topic, a good approach is to try and find other proverbs about the same topic and kind of fill out the picture of it. And we have this wonderful thing called Google that can help us do that. So you'd have to just sit there and read through chapters and chapters, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But if you want to quickly find out what other proverbs say about the same topic, run a Google search and you'll probably find some nice lists that pop up for you. And I'll probably include references from other places in the Bible as well. If you type in just about any topic, if you type verses about and then a topic, you usually get nice lists. About half the things on the list don't really have to do with the topic, but, you know, use your wisdom and discretion, and it can be helpful. Now, when a proverb tells us, well, before that, a question. I said these proverbs they're not promises. They're just about how things generally work. There is one category of proverbs that are always true. What would that subject matter of those proverbs be? They're always true because this never changes. And that would be proverbs about God. Proverbs about the character of God are ones that can be taken as this isn't just a general statement of how things work. This is something that is true all the time. And that is because our great God never changes in his character. You know, he works differently with different people at different times, but his character remains the same. And some verses about God's unchangingness, one from the Old Testament, Numbers 23:19. God is not a human being that he should lie, not a human being that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? God does not change in his character and what he says he will do. This is one area in which the God of the Bible is very different from the God of the Muslims. You know, a lot of people try and say we all worship the same God. Well, we might both claim to be worshiping the God of Abraham, but Allah and the God of the Bible are very different. This is one of the main ways in which they are different. God is unchanging. Allah comes right out and says, yeah, sometimes, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but yeah, sometimes I come up with a new truth and it replaces the old truth. It's not that it adds to the old truth, it just is completely opposite of it and completely replaces it. A big example of that would be in verses about peacefulness or warfare towards other religions. You can find verses in the Quran that say, yes, there's no compulsion in religion, yes, honor the people of the book, and then you can find verses in the Quran that say, slay the infidels wherever you find them, and you know, if you kill them, you're pleasing Allah. And that's because Allah is a false god who can change his mind. Our God is not. Our God is the same in his character. A New Testament verse on the same topic, Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ the same yesterday and today and forever. So when we come across proverbs that are based on the character and promises of God, those are ones that are not just general statements about how things work. Those are ones that we can trust on. And probably the best known example of that would be Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, where it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. That's not just a general statement that things will usually work out well if you trust God. It is based on the character of God. So if we allow him to be the one in control of our life, he will direct our path. He will make it straight. Doesn't necessarily say he'll make it easy, but he will direct it and make it what it needs to be. an example, and this is kind of the last thing, but an example of interpreting and applying a proverb. We can start with Proverbs 22:6. It says, start a child off or train up a child on the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it. This is one that gets used a lot. A lot of people take it as a promise, but it's not. It's a statement of how things generally work. And the basic idea is fairly simple. How a child is taught to believe and behave when they're young is how they will believe and behave when they're old. And people argue a little bit over whether does this mean if you teach them the right way, they'll stay in the right way, or if you let them do it on their own, they'll keep doing it on their own. Those both really boil down to the same thing. The way you raise a child when they're young has a huge impact on how they will act when they're an adult. And the basic application of that is fairly simple. The basic application of Proverbs is usually fairly simple. It's, I need to be working with my child from very early on to help them understand God's love, to help them understand biblical priorities, to help them understand biblical values of right and wrong, to help them understand self-discipline, and you know, and any other things that make a person a God-fearing adult who can operate, who can function as a member of society. And we can add to this other proverbs that talk about the idea of raising a child. And again, this is one of the topics that is all throughout the book of Proverbs, because a lot of it is addressed by Solomon to his son, who doesn't take advantage of his father's wisdom. But some examples, probably part of that's because Solomon didn't always follow his own advice. He got pretty foolish by the end of his own life, and kids do tend to follow what we do more than what we say. But some other verses, some other proverbs about parenting, 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them. 19:18, discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death. 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. 29:17, discipline your children, and they will give you peace. They will bring you the delights you desire. And there's others too, you can keep going. One thing that comes up over and over again in Proverbs is that if I discipline my child, rather than letting them do whatever they want to do, it's going to be better for both of us. It's going to make my life more peaceful. It's going to make their life longer because they're going to be more wise people. They're not going to be out there doing stupid, foolish, selfish things that get them killed early on. And Solomon obviously does also include even corporal punishment, spanking, in what he means by discipline. And again, this isn't a promise that good parenting always produces good adults. It's a general principle that the instruction that you give your children and the example that you set your children shapes their character as an adult. And it's a general principle that should guide our actions. You know, even if some children go astray for other reasons when they reach adulthood, we still need to be faithful and do our part. Proverbs, then, is a source of great practical advice. And I've said this before, there's 31 chapters in Proverbs. There's 30 to 31 days in most months. You know, every once in a while, take a month. Read a chapter a day. You'll get bombarded with all kinds of advice. and a lot of it's very memorable because Solomon has a way with words. It can be pretty funny sometimes. Pretty sarcastic, too. So it's pretty cutting. I just saw something recently as far as application goes. A friend of mine posted, put at the end of each proverb, and it doesn't really work with all proverbs, but at the end of each proverb, put on Facebook. And when you look at the proverbs about how we use our words or how we react to those who provoke us and put on Facebook at the end of it, it's, you know, kind of brings it home. Yes, how I interact with people needs to be governed by these principles, by the fear of the Lord. So we need to take advantage of these short, memorable sayings, this advice from the wisest man on earth who wasn't very good at following his own advice, but he was the wisest man on earth. And God has reserved for us his writings, his wisdom. Next week, we'll look, or not next week, but the week after that, we'll look at the next book he wrote, which is the book of Ecclesiastes, which is not as cheery as the book of Proverbs. It's one of those ones where the first time you come across it, you go, why is this in the Bible? This doesn't sound like something that a good, godly person should be saying. And it is, in fact, Solomon writing more towards the end of his life after he's realized the stupidity that he's committed throughout. Well, anyway, that's for 2 weeks from now. So that's the book of Proverbs.